Hello, this is Jonathan Marks via PCJ Online, just about to push the button on another programme from the media network Vintage Radio Archives.
By shortwave, medium wave, satellite, and the World Wide Web, this is the Dutch International Service, Radio Netherlands. Multimedia Network. A survey of new and traditional technology connecting across borders. This edition is produced and presented by Diana Janssen and Jonathan Marks.
Hello, and in half an hour we can go home. But before all that, we have another news show to round off the long, hot summer month of August.
But first, in case you missed last week's programme and continuity announcements over the last few days, there is a final reminder that as from Friday, August the 29th, there is an important change if you listen to Radio Netherlands audio on transponder 58, subcarrier 7.56 MHz. The lease on that analogue transponder has been extended at least until the end of this year.
We're changing the programme mix, though. That means you can hear English at the following times, 23.30 to 01.25 and 18.30 to 20.25 UTC. English on the World Radio Network, that's on transponder 22, remains at the usual times.
Quite a busy week on the receiver news front. In the US, Drake has launched an upgraded version of their R8 receiver called the R8B. They've added selectable sideband synchronous detection, which is a useful feature in the overcrowded shortwave bands.
If you like that sort of thing. And this past weekend at the Tokyo Ham Radio Fair, Japan Radio Company previewed a new set called the NRD545. Takashi Kuroda very kindly took a picture of the receiver, which is now posted on the Media Network webpage on the internet. The RF performance is reportedly similar to the established NRD535D, and the new set will cost around 200,000 yen when it's launched at the start of next year. The innovative side of the new radio is the implementation of digital signal processing techniques. Takashi adds, as a side note, that the number of exhibitors at the Ham Radio Show was well down on previous years, partly because of rising costs to take part.
And there's some movement on the longwave band at the moment. Piet Peipers passes on an email from the Icelandic National Broadcasting Service that's currently testing on 189 kHz from Gufuskalar in the western part of Iceland. Designed to cover maritime and inland areas not covered adequately by FM, the longwave mast is 412 metres high and the 300 kilowatt signal is getting out well.
And you would too if you were 412 metres high.
But there's more, for tests will start shortly from a second longwave transmitter in the east of the country at Eidar, using a 100 kilowatt transmitter on 207 kilohertz.
That frequency again, 207. BBC Monitoring also advised us yesterday that a megawatt longwave transmitter in the Ukraine has been reactivated on an off-channel frequency of 171.57 kHz. English programmes from Radio Ukraine International have suddenly appeared from 21 to 22 hours UTC, at least when it was checked on Tuesday. The channel of 171.57 is causing some interference problems to Russian transmitters in the region.
The Sri Lanka Broadcasting Corporation has started a relay broadcast to Europe using shortwave facilities owned by Merlin Communication, and that's the privatised arm of BBC World Service Transmitter Distribution. They're located at Skelton in the English Lake District.
Victor Gunatilica is on the line from Colombo with more details of the deal.
Well, yes, Jonathan, for a long time the SLBC and the BBC have been talking about some mutual relays. And finally, on the 16th of August, the SLBC started getting a one-hour relay via the BBC Skelton transmitter. And the idea is to get a decent signal and to project Sri Lanka into Europe. So the SLBC programs, which are prepared in the London office of the SLBC, goes on the air every Saturday on 5975 kHz, 5975, and the time between 1900 and 20 hours UTC, and of course this is for all of Europe. Well, we have got some reception reports which indicate that the signal is pretty strong, and the SLBC is hoping that it will improve its image and outreach in Europe.
And what's the BBC getting in return? Because presumably it's a swap.
Yes, and according to this arrangement, the BBC gets 1 hour's, that's 30 minutes of their Sinhala program to Sri Lanka and 30 minutes of their Tamil service daily to Sri Lanka. And this is between 15:15 and 16:15 UTC. So the BBC's Tamil and Sinhala get relayed live off the air on FM, medium wave and short wave to listeners in Sri Lanka. So that's a full 18 million audience for the BBC, Jonathan.
Potential audience.
Oh, yes, of course.
Victor, talking of Tamil language programs, last time you were on the wireless, you mentioned that the Tamil broadcaster, called the IBC, they're based in London, was trying tests to South Asia. They have apparently continued, though without much success, I believe.
The IBC, the Tamil service, has been finding it quite difficult to get a decent signal into South Asia. So they have been testing out of Georgia, and a recent series of tests have been going on between 1300 to 1350, that's 50 minutes of test transmissions. Well, they have been using only one transmitter at a time. On some days, they have been using 12120 kilohertz, just outside the 25 meter band, and on other days, 15075 kilohertz. Still, the signal doesn't seem to be acceptable for normal South Asian domestic receivers, so I figure that they'll have to do some more test transmissions.
Talking of acceptable signals, we noted on the 21st of August a press release coming out of the US saying that China is now jamming some of the broadcasts of Radio Free Asia, at least intensifying it.
Well, in the last couple of weeks, the opposition to Radio Free Asia has been intensifying. Jamming of the Korean broadcast began about a month ago, Jonathan, and as you said, the Chinese or the Mandarin service of Radio Free Asia started getting jammed on the 16th of August. Well, this came as a surprise because the service has been going on for almost 1 year without any jamming. So suddenly on the 16th of August, China introduced, not noise jamming or bubble jamming, but the very country and Western oldies. So on all the Radio Free Asia Mandarin frequencies, you can also expect to hear country and Western type of music, Jonathan.
Do you expect a sort of cat-and-mouse game to then start between the U.S. and China?
I don't think so, because the Vietnamese service has been jammed from day one, and that started in February, and Radio Free Asia has not been changing any frequencies, so they have been staying on their frequencies, so I don't think there'll be cat-and-mouse sort of, jamming and trying to get free of jamming.
So do you think they can overcome the effects? I mean, is it getting through to the target areas, or is it simply being quite effectively blocked out?
Well, reports from, for instance, Hong Kong and some other parts of Asia indicate that the jamming varies from site to site. On some locations, the jamming is hardly, it's negligible, whereas some frequencies get very heavily jammed. And even here in Sri Lanka, that has been our observation.
And Victor, they've also started a new language service, haven't they?
Well, yes, on the 16th of August, Radio Free Asia introduced its Laos service, and it's 1 hour in the morning to Laos and 1 hour in the evening. So, and by the way, these are 30-minute broadcasts which are repeated on the second half hour. And the schedule is 11:30 to 12:30 UTC, and the frequencies are 17805, 15170. And it is expected that soon 13685 and 9905 kilohertz would join. At the moment, we get very strong signals from 17805 and 15170, and that's 11:30 to 12:30 UTC. And again, between 2200 and 2300, 5930. 9365, 9725, and 9940 kilohertz are being used by Radio Free Asia for their Laos service.
Victor Gunatilaka on the line from Colombo. And in other news from Asia, China's State Council has banned foreigners from any involvement in running domestic radio and television stations.
Coming soon to a wireless near you in September, a review of the NRD 345, and lightning strikes the show directly.
Jonathan, that's the worst thing. I would not wish that on my worst enemy. Fortunately, no one was hurt, but my six-year-old boy was watching television at the time.
I've learned a few hard lessons, busting up a receiver, and the latest was 3 weeks back when I lost my internet modem. So lightning is something very, very important that we have to be wary of.
Pete Myers is in London, looking back at 30 years of Radio 1.
Well, my first impression is, as we sat there to have this photograph of the survivors after 30 years, was that how old we all looked, you know, and there I was with my bald head looking magnificent.
We ask if the Berlin Fair can boost the digital satellite industry into a new terrain.
But the internet proposition beginning next year, 1998, I think that will be the most boost that's coming on. Also for the satellite trade. When there's no boost, I think next year there are a lot of people who are bankrupt. At this moment there are a lot of people already bankrupt, but I think there will be more.
Plus the story of BFM, the forerunner of BFBS in Germany. That's Media Network in September.
True, not everyone listens to Radio Netherlands.
I came to Casablanca for the waters.
The waters? What waters? We're in the desert.
I was misinformed.
Don't you wish you were better informed? Radio Netherlands, international public radio, direct from Europe.
Despite some diplomatic efforts, one of the French external satellite channels, Canal France Internationale, has lost significant coverage of the Middle East. Designed to export French culture, a switching error by French Telecom resulted in a pornographic film from Canal Plus going out for some 20 minutes before the error was rectified. The incident happened in mid-July, but CFI still has no access to Arabsat.
Meanwhile, in Jordan, the BBC has gained access to the FM spectrum for a relay of the Arabic service. BBC and Radio Netherlands are also working on a joint project to assist journalists in the Middle East develop as independent broadcasters and publishers. Tudor Lomas is the manager of the so-called Gemstone project. It is effectively a media centre that's 12 months into its mission. So, how is it going?
The notion behind it all was brilliant. It was this idea of trying to increase contacts and understanding between journalists in Europe and journalists in the Eastern Mediterranean and North Africa. Because there's all sorts of worries. If you don't know what's going on, if you haven't met one another, the stereotypes loom very, very large and people come to feel threatened and worried and all the rest of it. By putting ordinary, good, working journalists together, getting them to know one another, giving them contacts between one another, they can check this out for themselves, and they've got contacts on into the future to check stories out and to check ideas out.
How is the media changing? We've seen in the past that the Middle East was very much a radio medium, a medium wave radio medium, bearing in mind that each of the countries built vast medium and long wave stations and used it for sort of inter-regional broadcasting. We've seen a shift also to television with the start of, for example, the Middle East Broadcasting Centre out of London. What's the situation now? I mean, is television gradually replacing radio?
In a sense, yes. Radio has yet to catch up. One of the areas that's interesting me a lot is the notion more of either community radio, local radio, using radio for what it's great at doing. You know better than I do. The Palestinians are beginning to do this. There are a number of Palestinian radio stations, despite all the problems. There's a great station called Radio Love and Peace. Commercial station, playing music, trying to do good news as well, trying to tell people what's going on. You're getting two or three stations like this beginning to develop. They're following the pattern of somewhere like Lebanon, where in the past there have been lots of radio stations around. On the other hand, you take some of the other countries, Jordan, Egypt, and Syria, of course. You've got state-run media. And the radio there, as with the TV, is under state control. And it doesn't give that energy. It doesn't give those ideas. And I don't think that can carry on. It's the driving force, as you say, is the change in television. It's the fact that now you're getting satellite TV bringing different standards of news, different kinds of news, different kinds of programs, and the state-run broadcasters are having to respond to that. And I think something similar will happen, I hope, certainly, in radio too.
Tudor, we take things for granted in Western Europe, which have a completely different impact over there in Jordan. Is that reflected in the satellite TV that you watch in the Middle East?
Oh, yes. You find, though, channels like the music channels, the pop music channels, are widely broadcast. And I often wonder whether they're not, in a sense, the most subversive of all, because quite often there's a very nihilistic message coming through on some of these, and you're not opening up any of the opportunities of thinking and questioning. You're just turning people into having quite a negative approach to the way the world's running. Yes, I've said state-run media, inevitably, it has a view of how the world is and should be, and it holds that quite firmly. But there's some interesting developments. I haven't looked into the full details of it, but Jordan Radio and Television, we're based in Jordan, has signed a contract to rebroadcast BBC World Service in Arabic. Now, this is an opening up. This is a willingness, I think, to have that message being broadcast throughout Jordan on Jordan's own transmitters without any control.
Right. Any other examples in the region?
Well, you look at the way the satellites are developing as well. Interesting area here. A Christian Arab station out of Lebanon, LBC International, Lebanese Broadcasting Corporation International, are now one of the most watched channels, apparently in the Gulf area and much of the Arab world. They have very attractive women presenters, dressed rather more revealingly than most Arab women are normally dressed, and they discover that an awful lot of Arabs like to watch this sort of program, and you begin to see how the media has an effect on the way a society operates and it runs, and what is acceptable and what is normal starts to shift.
Tudor Lomas, hoping that the European Commission will continue funding the Gemstone project. The website for more information is www.gemstone.net.
If Radio Netherlands was the answer, what on earth was the question?
Scientists are working on that particular one, but what about this? In the early 1980s, Media Network carried an April Fool's Day item. Apparently, a new shortwave transmitter site was being built in Belgium, and engineers had decided that since propagation through the ionosphere was subject to fading, introduced by imperfections in the upper atmosphere...
Well, maybe results would be better if they actually radiated signals through the Earth instead. Setting up the electrical circuit between transmitter and receiver precisely the other way round. We advised listeners to create a very good ground connection by burying a bucket in the garden and pouring plenty of water over it to ensure good ground conductivity.
And so to prepare for the test transmissions from Belgium, listeners were advised to connect the submerged bucket in the bottom of the garden to the antenna connection of their receiver. Switch on at 0401 UTC and wait for further instructions. Well, it all seemed funny at the time.
Now, on the face of it, you might conclude that a company in Australia is trying to pull a similar sort of stunt. If you put a radio next to a computer monitor, you'll get a loud buzz in most cases. So, there doesn't seem much hope for putting the entire radio inside a home computer, does there?
In fact, it's not a joke, it's an ingenious idea. Many radios have a microprocessor inside them, which is shielded to avoid the processor noise finding its way into the sensitive front-end circuitry. So why not try putting it the other way around? Build a radio onto a computer card, put it into one of the expansion slots of a personal computer, making sure you carefully shield it from the external noise of the microprocessor.
Czech-born engineer and radio enthusiast Milan Hudecek did that just over 2.5 years ago. Now living on the outskirts of Melbourne, he's the managing director of the expanding company behind Win Radio, busy taking the concept a lot further.
But if you build your own radio, putting your own microprocessor inside to run the set, you can also control the entire environment. In the case of Win Radio, you're asking people to buy a well-made radio on a computer card, but they could put that into any old computer.
Well, you're right saying that some computers are significantly noisier than others. In fact, we have found that it's usually not the actual computer itself, it's usually the monitor which is the main culprit in terms of the electromagnetic interference, and some monitors can be extremely noisy. Obviously, one of the other things to look at is to make sure that there are no active digital signals entering the actual receiver which can, you know, cause problems. But it's kind of a really strange thing with PCs. There is a lot of misconceptions going on, and sometimes it's just very easy to dismiss PCs as being just far too noisy to consider such an integration. But we have found that there are certain ways, certain design ways, which we have incorporated. But also there are some other precautions which the users can do, which make it possible to minimize the interference.
Currently, there are 12 people working on the project in Australia and another dozen around the world.
So, how does it perform? In fact, the WIN radio card lives up to its name. It's actually a wideband scanner covering 500 kHz, way up to 1300 MHz. You can't compare the shortwave performance between 3 and 30 MHz with a communications receiver specifically designed for this part of the spectrum. That's reflected in the dynamic range of the unit, which, around 12 MHz, is approximately 60 dB, sort of on par with the Trio Kenwood R1000, built at the start of the 80s, or a simple analog portable radio you might pick up today in the $150 range.
And that figure is an estimate, since you can't properly test the radio under the normal operating conditions when it's inside the personal computer. In Europe, the WIN radio turns out to be very sensitive, perhaps too sensitive, bearing in mind how many 500 kilowatt transmitters are within a radius of 1,000 kilometers. The key to controlling this lies in the use of the right sort of antenna.
Unfortunately, the current version of the WIN radio card only has a single connector on the back and comes with a single piece of wire that you're supposed to dangle out of the window. That's not very effective and illustrates a fundamental problem facing many scanner manufacturers. To be able to feed the receiver with signals stronger than background atmospheric and man-made interference, a shortwave antenna must be physically larger than any VHF-UHF antenna. And the impedance of most VHF antennas is nowhere near the 50 ohms level required by most shortwave receivers. Mismatch means that the already weak shortwave signals are attenuated even further.
We found there was a solution. We bought a duplexer antenna combiner. This is a small box which plugs into the back of the computer. There are two input plugs on the side. One is matched for a VHF-UHF antenna. The other allows you to connect a decent shortwave antenna.
So the development of WIN radio came from the scanner side.
Well, that was the original thrust of the product. We wanted to produce basically a wideband scanner, which is kind of on par of the usual ICOM or AOR or Kenwood wideband, 1.3 gigahertz scanners. And strangely, we sort of found that a lot of the audience which we got and a lot of people who were attracted by the idea were actually coming from the shortwave DX scene. So there was a bit of a surprise to us. The sort of problems which people would encounter with WIN radio, they would encounter them with general purpose wideband scanners. I mean, having said that, we are surprised ourselves to hear that we actually do have DX shortwave listeners working with WIN radio, and typically they would use a tune antenna or they would use a preselector.
At the recent ham radio fair in Friedrichshafen, Germany, the ICOM company showed the prototype of a black box receiver that contained the radio section, whilst a card inside the PC was used to tune it. Isn't that a better solution than trying to physically put the radio inside the PC box?
Yes, I think that that's a possibility, and in fact we are looking into developing similar black boxes also. But I think that if you look at WIN radio as basically an innovative and elegant product, we thought that we have to do the whole thing, basically integrate PC and radio as closely as possible. And one of the reasons for actually having it on the card is to be able to control a number of cards at the same time in a product or in a PC. You could have two cards operating simultaneously, and one of them is actually doing a spectrum sweep in real time, basically displaying the spectrum situation on a particular band, and you use the second card to actually tune around, to move the cursor against the changing spectrum, and you can sort of observe You can tune into the peaks, and just basically tune around.
Now, with the limited dynamic range of the Win Radio card, we found a medium wave filter was needed in the Netherlands to avoid hearing breakthrough from strong nearby medium wave stations. You notice it as background hash while you're trying to listen to shortwave broadcast stations. There is a two-position attenuator on the screen.
And you can certainly hear the difference if it's switched on or off. This is what it sounds like with the 20 dB attenuator switched on. And then switched off. You can certainly hear the radio overloading there.
And just for the background, for this test we used a short Windom antenna mounted about 7 metres above the ground. Much higher than that and the receiver becomes overloaded.
An outside antenna gave us much better reception than was ever possible from that short piece of wire that came with the card. For although Win Radio done an excellent job screening the receiver inside the computer, if the antenna input comes anywhere near 3 or 4 metres of the computer monitor, you get all sorts of buzzes in the background.
You can test this simply by switching off the monitor for a few seconds and listening to see whether reception of medium-strength signals suddenly improves. We used a 200 MHz compact Presario for the tests and we soon realized that the 17-inch monitor was a sort of broadcast transmitter all of its own.
This is much less of a problem on VHF and UHF and we had no problem listening to local point-to-point traffic. We found the Win Radio performed better in this respect than most handheld scanners, such as the ICOM ICR-10.
In conclusion, we think that the people at Win Radio are on the right track here. Their software is superb and knocks the spots off much of the control software we've seen for conventional radios. You really can see signals on the dial and chase suspect signals when they pop up.
The era of digital satellite receivers is now dawning in Europe, introducing the concept that software upgrades can be delivered over the air. In this case, Win Radio have posted their control software on the internet, and you can download the latest version in just a few minutes.
It would be nice if logins posted on the internet could be stored in a format that could be pumped straight inside the onboard radio.
There's obviously a market here for professional monitoring, because you can record stations straight onto the hard disk for playback later. Ratings organisations are always analysing the radio station across town, and this device can help them compare how competing stations are setting up their format.
No doubt that's the reason that Win Radio have an optional database management system with around 300,000 frequencies already stored in the receiver's memory. So what about the price?
The price is approximately about $500. And the database option, that one costs about under $300.
Win Radio in Australia are busy expanding the range of computer radios. We'll follow their development closely. In the meantime, you can get more information from this address. Win Radio, P.O. Box 6118, St Kilda Road, and Kilda is spelled K-I-L-D-A, Melbourne, Australia 3004. That's Win Radio, P.O. Box 6118, St Kilda Road, Melbourne, Australia 3004.
The fax number is 61 for Australia, 3 for Melbourne, and then 95253560. Once again, the fax number 613 95253560. And you can also check out this review as from September 10th on our website www.rnw.nl. Time to go and pack the bags.
For next week's show comes from Berlin. So, from both of us, back soon. Bye for now.
Some stations talk to the world. Radio Netherlands talks to people.
And that's where we end this nostalgic trip back into the Media Network audio archives from 1981 to October 2000. If you find all this stuff interesting, you might want to explore the Critical Distance website.
This is Media Network with Jonathan Marks,
where you can find more vintage audio shows, but also peruse recent video interviews I've made in the course of my travels around the world. Some of the videos actually follow up on points raised in the Media Network programme. So zip over to www.jonathanmarks.com for more details. In the meantime, this is Jonathan Marks saying back soon. Bye for now.
I regret to inform you this recording is now officially over.